Before we dive into this episode with Rusty George, I want to make you aware of his most recent book called After Amen. Wonderful read, and it's full of insightful thoughts about prayer and what you do after you pray and sitting and waiting on God and listening to how he's going to answer that prayer. So I want to make you aware of that so you can scoop that book up. I know you can find this on Amazon. It's a wonderful thing. So now you know.
Rusty George, welcome to the Homilist Podcast. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, well, thanks for having me. It's an honor to be here. I am a fan of your show, and I've enjoyed watching it and learning from it and listening to you, and I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Well, I appreciate it. I have had some serious geniuses on here. You're gonna fit right in. That'll be
well.
Excellent.
I don't know about that, but thank you.
Fit right in. So, yeah. So before we started, you were telling me as far as COVID in California, like things are really strange. I mean, as far as church stuff goes, tell us kind of how you're handling some of that, how you're navigating some of the stuff that's going on out there.
Yeah, it's a little bit different for us in that we do have a lot of mandates from our governor about when we can meet, when we can't meet, how many people are allowed in a room. He's even come so far as to tell us we can't sing, which we've not abided by that one, but we do abide by the masks. And we've had, I think at first, a lot of us thought, this is all political, this is nonsense, there's no COVID cases. But now it's gone on long enough. We all know somebody who's had it, probably somebody who's died from it. And where we live, our case level is very, very high. So now it's not an issue of, you know, are we bowing to Caesar if we don't meet, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. It's an issue of what's the most loving thing for our community. And, you know, I had a conversation with a guy just about an hour ago, and he made a great comment. He said, you know, the only people that really want to regather in the building are veteran Christians. No lost person is sitting around at home saying, boy, I sure hope the churches open up again. So if we decide to satisfy a select few of veteran Christians at the same time jeopardizing the health of our community, we're not being very good neighbors. So our position has been, we're going to meet outside as long as we can. And as we joked about earlier, it's really getting cold here. It's down in the 50s. But, you know, we'll be persecuted for Christ. We'll go ahead and meet outdoors. And so far we've been able to do that, but I would anticipate us moving in to the building probably in the next few weeks as we get closer to Easter.
Right on. Is there something that's going to set that in motion? Politically, or what's going on?
I think once we, not politically, because they have come out so far as to say that we can gather, but it's going to be limited in the amount of people. I think once we see the hospital counts start to go down, the more comfortable we'll feel far as letting people in.
Got you. How important was it that you guys kind of established a position on COVID and what was going on? Was that because for us it was a little bit different, but did you guys just come right out and say, hey, here's our position, here's what we're doing, or did it take a little bit of slalom?
You know, it did take a little bit of a slalom. And what we were real careful to do is to not take a position. We decided to just adhere to what the government was telling us, like everybody else did in the first, you know, few weeks.
Sure.
And so what we did was we just decided to, adhere to those government guidelines, not meet for a few weeks. Quarantine was over. And then some churches started to meet, and we just decided to play it safe, play by the rules. And they put us in these tiered systems where there's the purple tier, which is the worst case scenario. Nobody's allowed to meet anywhere, you know, no dining, movie theaters, anything like that. Then there's the red tier, which I never understood why red was not the worst. But anyway, red's the next.
Okay.
And red is, okay, now we'll let some gatherings go. So we kind of started following that. And we were just really clear to our people that we're not going to put anybody in jeopardy. And we're looking a lot at the school system, because when the schools start letting people gather, then it it means that there's now public acceptance for this a little bit more. As I have often said, you can't lead people where they're not willing to go, or at least it's very difficult to, and our people just aren't willing to be inside with hundreds of other people. Yeah. So right now it wouldn't make a lot of sense for us to put a lot of effort into that. So we were really careful not to come out and make a big political statement or a book, chapter, and verse as to why we should be gathering. We just kept pushing people to our online experience, which we've been pushing for a few years now before this. And since then, we've learned a lot and we've grown a lot in just what we offer online and how we connect with people there. So I think that was our main thing. And the other thing is we never said we were closed. We just said we were open online. We'll regather in person eventually, and we'll keep you up to date on that. And that's allowed us to be a little bit fluid in how we communicate and not kind of set hard dates and, in the stones, so to speak, where people end up having to be disappointed.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's excellent. I think that's excellent. I think it's wise. Excuse me. I think that's really wise. There were a lot of people out of the gates that came out and just, here's our position. Here's what we're doing. And boy, I tell you what, that sent me kind of sailing backwards, thinking, what are we going to do where we are? How are we going to handle this? And you could kind of tell, and this might be a little bit of a geek subject, but you could kind of tell based on, the type A guys that were out there, based on Enneagram numbers, guys who were taking stands with certain things, and I was real quick. Our staff and elders, we talked and we said, hey, listen, here's the thing. Here's the new thing for us. We're not using the C word for the next 6-8 weeks. We're not using it. We're not addressing it. We're not going to talk about it. We're going to just continue to plow forward with what we were doing and let this be what it is. And of course, the mandate for us was very similar to what you guys had going on, that you had to, make your group smaller and different things. And so we had our online portion already going, but that was very similar to what we did. We were like, we're not going to take a position on this just yet. We kind of need to sit back and observe this. And boy, I tell you what, not talking about it during that time when it was just a hot topic to talk about, I think that saved us a whole lot of stuff. I'll tell you what else we did, Rusty, that was really great, is our elders and our staff got together and we said, hey, from this point forward, we're going to pray and fast on Mondays just about unity, because I was seeing so much stuff from so many guys, and you could see how quickly people divided on issues of closing the church. And you've got your militants on both sides, wearing a mask, and they're militant, they're coming out on both sides. And, just praying about that. We had a moment where one of our elders came in, and we've been basically, our whole place has been just completely mask-free, just going through doing what we were doing before. I think we were online only for eight or 10 weeks, and then one of our elders showed up and he was wearing a mask, and I had already kind of taken my position of, I'm not doing this. I'm not, just from where I'm at, I'm going to observe this and just set back. And when he walked in, I had to start wrestling with, and he's a good, good friend. A good friend of mine. And when he walked in wearing one, I was like, we're going to need to fast and pray about this, because I can feel my skin rising up. And it was just kind of that, but it was good. It was such a good conversation. He and I sat down and talked, and it was a weird time to navigate. Did you see your personality type and maybe kind of your motivation or even your Enneagram number show up in crazy ways during that time, especially in leadership?
Yeah, definitely. I'm a six on the Enneagram, so I'm a loyalist. So when people decided that they were against our non-positional position, it became very offensive to me. My personality is an introvert, and so the idea of being stuck at home wasn't that big of a deal for me, and the extroverts were very, very frustrated. But over time, it obviously begins to kind of weigh on you a little bit. I think that it was helpful for us not to take major positions on things, because you think about it, even the greatest experts that we have out there, they were saying at the beginning, we don't know what this is. You look at Dr. Fauci, whatever you think about him, he even changed his mind. So none of us went through a course at Ozark on how to navigate a pandemic. Right. So I think we've all learned a lot about, hey, we can be educated and our minds can change. Everything's not quite as black and white as you think it is. So let's kind of lean on what is black and white, which is our stance on scripture and what Jesus has said, and we will love our neighbor. And the only commandment he gave us was to love others the way he's loved us. And, you know, weaker brother, stronger brother, in some areas I'll wear a mask, in some areas I don't really need to.
Right.
But I'll do whatever it takes to be able to extend that kind of love towards people. And I think that's really helped us. I think the churches that came out really strong one way or the other at the beginning might've had to do a little bit of backtracking or probably collected people in their church that all think like them.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah. I remember having a conversation with a guy that I had on my podcast, and I told him, I said, I feel like every time I speak, half of our church is mad. And he said, that's a good thing. And I said, why is that? And he said, because you have a diverse congregation. I thought, well, that is certainly seeing the glass half full. I hadn't thought about it that way, but he's right. I mean, if I can sit in a room and I hear people talk, you know, one side about it, and then another couple come in and talk the passionate other side of it, then I realize we have somehow found ourselves in a position to reach all sides.
Yeah. Yeah. That's excellent. Yeah. That's a good point. That's a real good point. When he said, that's good, they're mad. Did you say that's because you're an eight on the Enneagram?
Yeah, definitely. <That's> why. Those eights, they love that, don't they?
Oh man, I tell you what, I land as a seven on the Enneagram, but I tell you what, that eight wing over on the side, boy, I tell you, it wants to rise up. It wants to take over, build a city, start a war. I mean, just gets out of control. So, speaking of which, Enneagram, this connects over, Shane Wood, who's over at Ozark Christian College. I saw him yesterday, and then I saw Michael DeFazio, which is one of your guys from, he was out there with you for what, eight or 10 years.
I think that's about right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We got out of Ozark.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was great. It was great. And he said, hey, did you connect with Rusty yet? I said, no. I said, I botched up something with my calendar the first go around. I said, I don't even know what I did. I put it in and I was waiting and I was so excited. And I got an email and they're like, hey, Rusty, sorry, missed you. And I was like, miss me? Like, where would I even do? And he was just like, oh man, I said, so that's just my fault. So, but we're hooking up tomorrow. We're hooking up tomorrow. So he and I had a good conversation. He's a good guy, man, and a good teacher.
He really is. He is one of our favorite sons. And even though he didn't grow up here, we count him as one of ours. He's a good friend and I love staying in touch with him, and he's doing great work at our alma mater.
Yeah, I'm telling you what, I sat there in that class yesterday with him, Ephesians and Colossians, and what a gentle teacher. I mean, I haven't known teachers like that, but what a gentle teacher. I mean, taking these students and, I mean, by the hand, walking them through, what do you see? What do you feel? What do you hear? What are you thinking? You know, just deeply engaged in what they're doing. I was very impressed. I was very impressed. So yeah, it was excellent. Yeah. This whole 2020 was kind of a crazy one. What really got me giggling though was, if you go back and you start looking at some of the big leaders across the board and their sermon series, right around the end of December of 2019, as they're rolling into 2020, and you start listening to the conversations and the sermon headings and the titles of the series that were coming out, it's like, it's hilarious, because it's like 2020 vision. You know, this is our year to see God clearly, and we're going to focus, and we're going to, you know, and I was thinking to myself as the year was ending, I was like, 2020, like, there's a lot of plays on this, and I don't know if I want to use any of them. And then then everybody just got smoked. And then we're talking about, you know, all kinds of completely, you know, life through the mask and I mean, all kinds of wild stuff, you know, but it was really interesting. How was the year for you personally?
The year for me personally, I mean, obviously the overplayed word is unprecedented, but I think that you begin to learn a lot about your leadership and your teaching style. Our teaching style had to change dramatically, because it was no longer based upon the room. It was based upon the camera, which is a totally different technique. I think we all saw examples of people. You can just go on YouTube and see how people botch that. And there's some great videos out there, you know, lighting their house on fire, or their cats walk across the camera, or those kind of things. But I think for us, it was a whole new set of skills. It was like we were we were playing baseball, and then suddenly now we're playing tennis. You know, there's some things that translate, but most of it does not. And in that process, you had to educate people along the way. Now, one of the really good things that happened was we've been trying to convince people for years that Zoom call small groups could actually work. And we prove that point now.
Yeah,
they have recognized actually the blessing to it. There's no travel time. You are able to put the kids down to bed and have a meeting at 9 o'clock. There's a lot of good things about it. Now, you fast forward that 9 months and people are Zoom fatigued and they're ready to see people again. But I think for us, it was a really great year for our team to walk through because we learned a lot about each other. We made some strategic momentum together. I think that on all staffs every year, there's some level of transition. Somebody moves, somebody gets another job or whatever. 2020, nobody really moved. So you really got to build some, you know, cohesiveness together. Which they're predicting 2021, everybody will be moving. But so far, our team has stuck together and it's been really good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Yeah. There has been a little bit of an exodus out your way, hasn't there?
Yeah. I think everybody in California is moving either to Idaho, Nashville, or Texas. Those are the big three I hear. So,
Yeah. That's kind of wild. I've enjoyed watching guys, you know, plot out their steps on how to get through this last year. And that's been such a good learning experience, but there's been this kind of low grade anxiety with everybody. I think with pastors, I think with people in church. Just across the United States and probably globally as well, but just this low grade anxiety. And it's almost like there's a little bit of a schism in how much we trust each other. When we see each other, I mean, and that awkward, are we shaking hands? Are we hugging like we always have? Are we high-fiving? Are we forearm bash? What are we doing here? You know, but watching that has been really kind of a strange thing. It's been just a bizarre time. Hey, I got a few questions for you that I want to kind of get your take on. Because I think probably you've got some really good insights on some of this. But before we do, I want to ask you one of my favorite questions. What passage of scripture makes you laugh? Like, what passage makes you just all out laugh? Like, that's out of control. Like, I can't believe it's there.
You know, I love that question. And I was so excited about this podcast because I don't ever get to talk about this stuff, you know.
Right.
Nobody wants to talk preaching with me. They, you know, we talk about so many other things. And people in your church, it's not a craft for them. They don't care. They just know what you didn't say or what you said wrong. Mm-hmm. For me, one of the funniest passages of scripture is at the Transfiguration, and I glanced over this for years until I heard somebody point it out, and I've not stopped laughing since every time I read it. Peter is going on and on about, here's what we need to do. We need to build a shelter and we need to set up camp. And basically we need to keep church camp going all year round. And it says, while he was still speaking, God said, and it's like God just interrupted him. Like, that was so stupid. I'm not even going to let you finish.
Oh, that's good.
That one makes me laugh every time.
That's good. Yeah, you do. Isn't it funny? You breeze over stuff. Like, you'll just breeze right. Like, you don't even catch some of the reality of, hey. Listen.
Enough already.
Yeah. Hey, this is what you do. This is, hey, Jared. Just stop flapping your gums. Like, I know you think you got ideas. Like, shut it down. I'm doing something here.
Exactly.
That's good. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Obviously, there's all the others where, you know, the whole plank in your eye and those kind of things, you know, and Jesus' repartee with the Syrophoenician woman about the dogs is amusing to me, but, and I think the miniseries, The Chosen, has brought a lot of humor out of some of the things Jesus said, I really enjoy. And I think Paul makes some rather brash statements as well. So I think back to one of our preaching classes we probably both had, and It was probably Mark Scott made us listen to Fred Craddock messages, which I thoroughly am grateful for. Yep. I love Craddock. But I remember him talking about the book of Galatians and how every other letter that Paul writes is so glowing and loving at the beginning. But as Craddock says, but when he gets to the Galatians, he's as mad as a boiled owl. And I thought, man, that is a visual I've never had before. And now when I read Galatians, I think about that.
It's that's just good. Yeah, that's good. No, I hadn't heard that one. And I've listened to loads of Craddock, but yeah. It's kind of like, who was I? It was DeFazio. That's what it was. DeFazio. DeFazio was talking about the first, 13, 14 verses in chapter one of Ephesians. And, he pieced some stuff together that was really cool. And he talked about three words, and he talked about worship, theology, and wonder. And so he gets all the way through it. And of course, it's that one long run-on sentence of 200 some odd words. And then you get to the end of it. And it was so cool because Michael, in all of his brilliance and insight, was willing to hit the brakes and go back and say, and here's what else I think. I think the theology is here, and this points us in a way of worship. But here's the other part. You're not supposed to be able to understand every single bit of this right now. It's supposed to smash you like, that seems like a lot, and make mm-hmm. you wonder, like some of that is there, especially when you talk about the humor that's in scripture, or you talk about just the majesty aspect, or the bigness of some of the ideas inside of scripture. Like, how do you get your head all the way around these? And it was cool because, Michael just said, here's the deal. Sometimes you don't, and it was intended to be reread. And so you read it, and then you go back and you reread it, And I just thought that was so brilliant. I thought that was just excellent insight.
That is so good. Yeah, I do love that idea. And I think that to quote Craddock again, we often preach and act like we've walked around God and taken pictures, like we've figured it all out. Now let me teach you from the top of the mountaintop what it is, what it means. And one of the things I learned from Mark Scott, who's been on your show, and I loved his interview, is he would often say this, here's what I think it means right now. Mm. It was like, here this guy was when I had him, he's in his late 40s, early 50s perhaps. And he's still learning.
Yeah.
He's still thinking. We go back to the COVID thing. I mean, we thought we knew what it was in March. And now we have a better idea of what it is, So it's just this constant humility with the text of, well, what did this mean then? And I shouldn't be so strong as, my absolutes on some of these positions of doctrine and theology, because, there's a few things I'll die for, but there's a few things we're still learning about.
Yeah. Yeah, that was another part of what Michael was going through and just talking about. There's the words, predestined, in that chapter. And so he just steps back and he said, this is what this would look like, and this is what this would look like. And I think this is this. I think if you're going to argue this, you should do it from a different passage. But I'm not willing to throw all that out. But I'm not willing to throw any of this out. And just the approach to it was very, very wide-eyed and childlike. And you think about the people that you admire, at least the people that I admire when it comes to teaching and preaching, it's really the ones that don't show up as if, like what you said, I was just with God. We were sharing, all this, so let me tell you what he's saying. Like, it's not that. The ones that I want the breathless. I want the breathless coming from pointing, shaking their head. I mean, looking around like, I can't tell you everything because I don't know everything, but I can tell you this, like my experience over there with him was, he told me to shut up. Like he said, like, he was like, shut up. I was talking too much. And then he said this, and that's so much more endearing and easy to learn, especially in a world to where everybody is an expert, And that's kind of the culture we're in right now. Like, everybody's an internet expert, as if Google research were a degree of some kind.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. What somebody said online the other day, I think this has made its way around. I'm so thankful that my friends who were biology experts, 2 months ago are now constitution experts today.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
the idea that somehow we have, we've figured it all out because we've just Googled enough things. And certainly with scripture, we just continue to learn. yeah. and continue to see it in a fresh perspective, which is the beauty of it.
Yeah. Well, there's when it comes to the preaching part, excuse me. It's really, there's things that you can kind of get your head around and it can kind of become your thing. You know, we mentioned Shane Wood, he is immersed in the writer John, just immersed in it, you know? And I think he just does a knockout job with painting the pictures that are there. He's passionate about it. You know, you think about some of those guys that they just, Tommy Nelson, I think about Tommy Nelson down in Denton, Texas. He does a bit on Song of Solomon.
Unbelievable.
That is just phenomenal. And when you hear him talk through it, it's almost like it's an extension of who he is, you know? Mm-hmm. It's something that he's poured so much into him that it just kind of seeps out. Mm-hmm. With your preaching, what would you say are the things that you just kind of naturally gravitate to that just kind of show up with you on a fairly regular basis?
Well, I think to understand that, you kind of have to understand my journey a little bit. And I'll give you just a touch of that. I grew up in the Midwest, Wichita, Kansas. My parents came to Christ about the time that I came around. Mm-hmm. So I was born, they thought, we have no idea how to be parents, let's go to church. So they start going to church and I grew up in the faith with them. And so all they knew to do was just be in church every time the doors were open. So with that came a healthy dose of legalism, of just the, you know, kind of be here, do what you're said, what you're told. I was a firstborn, so I was a rule keeper and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I go off to Bible college and I, you know, figure out what it takes to excel. And I do my very best. I get a double major and then I go off to, you know, to work in ministry. Had 9 great years in Lexington, Kentucky at Southland and had an unbelievable experience there. But, you know, I come out here and I start work, you know, in this church that's relatively new. And I just kind of, I hit rock bottom just emotionally. Wasn't really sure why. And had a great conversation with a friend of mine also from the same church I'm from and also from Ozark, Shane Phillip, who's at the Crossing in Las Vegas. And he told me about an experience he had with a counselor named Dr. John Walker, who I ended up going to see. And John Walker looks at me and he says, your problem is you just don't love Jesus. And I said, what do you mean I don't love Jesus? And he said, because you don't believe he loves you. And we love because he first loved us. And it was an aha moment for me that much of my life was based on legalism and checking the right boxes. And I really believe in God's grace. I just believed it was for everybody else. Mm. And so for me, it was more of a, you know, we'll see. We'll wait and see. So I could preach Luke 15. I could preach the grace passages, but I always kind of thought God's fingers were crossed when it came to me. And so during that week with Dr. Walker and then subsequent continued work on this, I've come to believe that God really does love me. Mm-hmm. And so I think that what has happened in my preaching is I gravitate towards any passage that reveals the love of God for everybody. And so I do love the Gospel of John because he's the one Jesus loved. And, you know, he gets to sit and hear the heartbeat of Jesus. And then you get into Revelation and you realize this guy thought Jesus forgot about him. And then Jesus shows up again. I just could get emotional thinking about that. Yeah. And how he walks us through that and to know what he's been through and seeing people in his church killed. And now he's on this prison island and all these things. Then you get into Paul's letters and you hear about, you know, the reckless love of God, even for a sinner of whom I am the worst, as Paul would say. I just see those passages and it's everything in me not to preach Luke 15 every single week. You know, it's everything in me not to keep referencing, you know, Romans where it says there are now no condemnation for those that are in Christ Jesus. And so I think when it comes to my preaching, it always tends to get to God really loves you. Yeah. I heard, see if I can get this right, Eugene Peterson's son at Peterson's funeral. Did you hear this?
Yes.
4 things my dad always said. It's in every book. He fooled you all thinking he had more to say, but God loves you. God is for you. God pursues you and he's relentless.
Yeah.
Oh,
my dad only had 1 sermon.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. It was so good. And I just think that's it.
Yeah. And that's the genius of it, isn't it? I mean, that's always the genius of it. It doesn't matter if it's industry or if it's ministry, like that's the genius of it. You got to grab that thing and you got to keep bringing it back to the middle. Like, this is the real deal right here. Yeah, you know,
exactly.
That's powerful. Yeah. I appreciate you sharing that. That's a good quote. That's a real good quote. I'd heard that, I think I've got a Thursday morning group. I meet with some other pastors. And shortly after Eugene Peterson's funeral, I think our next meeting, one of the guys came and he had shared that. And then I think most recently when I heard it was with you and Carrie Newhoff.
Mm.
I was listening to your interview with him on your podcast. And that was excellent. That was excellent. Yeah. That's a great thing to fall back on. I mean, if you're going to have one, I mean, it sure beats banging out whether or not, you know, we're doing communion right. You know, I mean, that's
should you have unleavened or leavened bread?
Exactly right. One loaf or the little chiclets. Okay. Or yeah, whatever else. Hey, quick question off that subject just a little bit. How have you been able to do communion? Are you guys using the little portable prepackaged?
Yeah. What's funny is, you know, we met in a movie theater for 10 years. Mm. So we did prepackaged communion already back before anybody knew what it was. And I can tell you, after doing it for 17 years, it hasn't gotten any better. It's still awful.
yes,
but no, we were doing that then. And then we moved in the building and we went ahead and bought all the equipment to do it, you know, in-house and to do the cups and everything. And our people were freaking out. This was 10 years ago. And they said, oh, that's not sanitary. I thought, wow, I would have never thought about that. And now here we are in the midst of COVID. And of course, it's not sanitary. So we've just been doing the prepackaged little coffee creamer cups. And it works really well for us, which now you can get them in gluten-free, which people love that out here in California. You get a vegan version.
That's great.
People will love it.
That's great. Oh, that's great. Yeah, we've seen that same kind of thing. So for people who are catching this, and I don't think we mentioned this in the beginning, you're at Real Life Church in Valencia, yeah. California, right?
Yeah, Valencia, just north of Los Angeles. If you're a fan of the TV show 24, season 6, we had a nuclear bomb go off here.
Wow.
But Jack Bauer saved the day. So
thank heavens for Jack Bauer.
We're doing okay.
Good, good, good. Yeah, that's great. That's great. Yeah, I love listening to guys. I love listening to preachers who, like, their natural inclination is that when they get towards their like the critical point, you know, they're headed towards their conclusion or the climactic point in the sermon, you start to see the thing. That's typically that area where you see whatever that thing is that's inside them, that's connected with them, that's impacted them, begins to emerge, you know, and you can really kind of get a good read on who some of these guys are as they preach through and they get to those moments, you know, and then here comes, like, here's the thing, you know. For me, it's so much mystery, and it's so much when I say inspiration, what I mean is that it inspires me. It's the wonder part. It's I'm floored by stuff. Like, that's in there. Like, check, this is in there. Like, I can't even believe, like, God's talking about this thing. And this is where we are right now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you can hear a lot of that. Yeah. That's good. When your preaching takes off, like when you start working on your sermon, you start working on what's the week going to look like, or a series. Are you a guy who's planned out like a year ahead and you know what you're doing and it's all written down? Is that how you do things?
Yeah, my family likes to refer to me as a bit of a control freak or a little OCD. I just call it wisdom and stewardship and leadership. But yeah, I'm planned out way in advance. Right now, I think messages are written through Easter. Message topics are done through 2022, I think. So now obviously those can change, but sure, it gives our production and tech team and worship team a lot of, you know, creativity if they know way in advance where we're going. Plus, with having multiple ways you access the message, both in the room and online, you can kind of get ahead of things of, you know, maybe some big initiatives you want to launch. Like, we feel like for 2021, the best thing we could do for our community is focus on mental health. Now, that doesn't mean I preach on it every weekend, but what topics are we going to preach or texts we're going to preach that lend itself to promoting, hey, we have some counselors available on site for you, or we have some free counseling available on Zoom calls or whatever it is. And then we can kind of line all that up together. So that just kind of works more to my wheelhouse. I know some guys are, you know what, God doesn't speak to me till Friday afternoon. If it ain't done by Friday afternoon, I've got some real problems. I need to be able to sleep at night.
Right.
And plus, as you know, if you're in ministry very long, you recognize that no matter how much you think you've got your week planned out, something happens.
Sure.
You know, you got to go to somebody's house. You got to go to the hospital. You got to meet with somebody. And, you know, if your message isn't ready, then you come into the pulpit kind of half-baked, and that's that never good.
Yeah. Comedians, preachers, public speakers, people that just inspire you, blow you away. You hear them and they kind of light something for you, give you a little bit of a little
reward. Yeah. I saw that on your list of questions, and I love talking about this because I am fascinated by the method of comedy. Mm. And partly because I use it a lot, and I'm not like a stand-up where I tell jokes, but I say things that I think are funny from the text or from life or even personal stories. And so because of that, I'm constantly watching stand-up comedians. We have a few, nobody you'd know, that go to our church that I talk with or I send material to, and I say, hey, how would you punch this up a little bit? What am I missing here? And so because of that, I love the Seinfeld stuff, the comedians in cars getting coffee.
Mm-hmm.
I just think there's so much to learn about the way they think about presentation and material and how they write. The Tim Ferriss podcast, I don't know if you've listened to Tim Ferriss, but he interviewed Jerry Seinfeld a few months ago. And they talked a lot about that, the craft of writing jokes. And I thought, this is what I learned in homiletics. Mm-hmm. You sit down with a pad of paper and you make something happen. And then you go back to it. You go back to it. You go back to it. Then I remember learning from Bob Russell, never tell a story for the first time from the stage. Tell it around the dinner table, then in a car, then with 10 people, and then a staff meeting. Yep. And you just keep working it and working it and working it until you finally figure out what's the funny point, what's the applicable point. Because you've seen guys that are funny and they can't ever make it serious.
Yeah.
Then you've seen guys that are serious and they can never make it funny. The art is, as Mark Scott would say, how do you get them to lean their head back in laughter so you can cut their throat later on?
Yeah.
Such a grotesque illustration, but we've never forgotten it.
Nope.
So Seinfeld teaches me a lot. His new book is really great. It's just all his material from the last 40 years. But Sebastian Maniscalco.
Oh, gosh, he's great.
So funny. His observations of things. And I love that. And I remember learning from Leno. And I'm not a Leno guy. I was always a Letterman guy. But I remember learning from Leno that he would go and record the Tonight Show at 5:30, you know, here West Coast or, you know, on the West Coast, and it would air pre-recorded. And then he'd go out to the comedy clubs late at night with just note cards of jokes and stand up, you know, in front of 30 people and tell jokes and figure out which ones worked for the next night.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, you know what that is? That's supply preaching.
Yeah.
You know, that's working the little country church of two families and learning who you are and your style and what works and what's, you know, because I think we're all our professors when we get out of Bible college. We just preach like Mark Scott or J.K. Jones, right, or Mark Moore. And then we get somewhere and we hit our 30s and we're like, okay, I think I'm figuring out who I am and how I teach and what's comfortable for me. And that's a lot of those, getting those repetitions in. So that's big for me. And a few others, Gene Apple, is a guy he's out here on the West Coast, but he's from the Midwest, and I love his teaching. And, you know, he's a guy that, you know, he'll tell you, he says, my technique is to pull the heartstrings. And so at the end, you're going to cry, he's going to get you. And it's always authentic. I love John Tyson. I think he's one of our great exegeters. He's kind of our next Tim Keller. A guy that a lot of people don't know about, but I love him, is James Emery White. He, you know, is a PhD and a scholar and taught at Gordon Conwell forever. But now he's got this incredible church called Mecklenburg Community Church. And he just really speaks to the Gen Zers in a way that I've not heard other guys do it. And he's in his late 50s. So he's great.
Yeah. That's those comedians, the way they write, the way they talk, the way they think. And like you said, the observation thing is just always, is always key, you know? You learn, and you know what's really interesting is if you listen to enough comedians, like what you're talking about, what you'll find yourself doing if you're a public speaker, you know, a preacher, or maybe if you do comedy yourself, or you've given lectures, what you'll find yourself doing is that as you go through and you learn a new thing about observation or a new thing about comedy or a new thing about writing, you'll go back and almost reinterpret some of the previous stories, and then you learn like I was trying to fit this story into this format. Like, it doesn't work that way. Like, yeah. this is better in this format. You know, exactly. This is a great one-liner. This isn't, you don't need to know that my grandmother said it. This is just a great one-liner, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. One of the things I've learned from comedians, and they try to teach you this in homiletics, is we don't need to know everything going on in the room, you know, mm-hmm. And comedians will, they'll take an idea and they'll whittle it down to get it to the shortest statement as possible to get the maximum impact. And I know you see this when you look at young communicators. They get up there and they think every word carries the same value. Mm-hmm. And so they spend as much time talking about the menu as they do the dessert they were trying to describe. Like, I don't need to know all the options. I need to know the point. And certainly now our attention span is so short. What do they say? We have an 8-second attention span and goldfish have 9 seconds. Right. You know, so we're worse off than goldfish. So you've got to get at it quick.
Right.
And I think about that in terms of like the introduction. In homiletics, I was taught you got 5 minutes to get people's attention. You don't have that long anymore. Mm-mm. And you got to get it out there. And it's got to be something that's like user-friendly, that, you know, most people didn't walk into church wondering if Isaiah was 3 books or not. That's not keeping them up at night. If you start with that, you've lost them. Or they just sit there and think, yeah, I knew this wasn't for me. Yeah. But if you start with, you ever wondered if God cares about your marriage? Mm. Or you ever wondered, you know, if your kids are going to turn out okay? Well, now it makes sense. Mm-hmm. I was driving by a fire station the other day, and they had a big sign out front. It said, ready, set, go. And it had 3 big pictures of what you're supposed to do to be ready for a fire. And I drove past that and I thought, oh, that's a good idea. But I thought, boy, I tell you what, if we had a fire right now, which we often have, if we had a fire, I'd be looking at that sign. And I just thought, that's the way people view church. Mm. They drive by them and they go, okay, good for you. And maybe someday if I need a funeral, or if I need you to help fix my kids.
A wedding.
Yeah, a wedding. But I don't see the urgency of it. Uh-huh. Yet I think part of our job as communicators is to teach people the urgency of what it is we have to share. Mm. And it's not just for knowledge sake. It's going to actually change their lives.
Yeah. 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 That's a good insight. I listen to guys like Tom Papa.
I love Tom Papa.
Yeah. And you know, yesterday I was listening to President Matt Proctor give a little introductory spiel, and as he started, I just had Tom Papa in my head because of the suit and the, you know, similar frame, and I was just, Tom Papa was in my head, and I kind of got the chuckling, and I kind of had to calm myself down, you know, like this is, but Proctor's a great storyteller, and he's funny, yes, and he's a great preacher, but he reminded me so much, you know, in his suit and the whole thing. I was like, golly, like I didn't need that right now. Like, this is supposed
boy to be- I'd never thought about that, but you're exactly right. And kind of the, you know, he's got that classic dad joke humor too.
Absolutely.
It just plays so well. You know, he was my RA.
Oh wow.
He lived next door to me my freshman year. And I lost track of the number of times he had to come in and tell me and my roommate to turn the music down or stop destroying things or whatever. Uh-huh. You know, he'd walk out of the room and we'd joke that he's a 50-year-old man trapped in a 22-year-old body.
Absolutely right.
And he'd walk out of the room thinking, I don't think those guys are Christians. So,
yeah.
And he tells that from stage now. So we're on good terms.
That's good. That's good. Yeah. But that, when he started talking, man, I was like, because I, you know, when I had him, he, I mean, when I was in school, you know, he was teaching preaching classes. And so you got the preacher, you got the preacher as well. And now it's just a little bit different. It's kind of like he's commanding the room and, you know, navigating the ship and telling everybody, and just doing a knockout job.
He has stepped in the role well, definitely.
Boy, I tell you what, there's some people that are just built that way, aren't they? I mean, they could just, I mean, like he's at home. He's at home just holding on to this enormous thing. And this is what I could do. I could do this. You know, this is incredible. Yeah. Sebastian Maniscalco, Tom Papa. There's a guy, I don't know if you've seen him or not. I even hesitate to bring him up because he can be a little off color, but a guy named, and I've only seen him on Instagram, a guy named Bobby Sausalito.
I've heard of him. I've never heard any of his stuff.
Yeah. If you want to get the full impact, you have to back up to the beginning of when he kind of started doing some daily videos, Bobby Sausalito.
Okay.
And his use of made up words is incredible. Like the way, like he makes up words, he uses words that, for a word that is meant for one thing and he uses it over here on the other side. He renames everybody. I mean, so for instance, Gavin Newsom, he lovingly referred to as Gavin Mussolini. And that was one of his, you know, and he gets all amped up for Donald Trump. He calls him Donnie Baseball. I mean, it's just so like random, but then you watch it and it's pretty colorful. I mean, language wise, but golly, this guy, the use of words. And I'll tell you what else, he comes out of the gates firing. Like there's no, hey, just wanted to hop on here real quick, which is like the phrase of 2020. Hey, I just wanted to hop on here real quick. But this guy, like you scroll into it and it's like, welcome to another day in the hot garbage world of whatever, you know, you know, Ron DeSantis is this and this and this, you know, Gavin Mussolini and, you know, whoever. I mean, he's just, but his use of words is really, really, really impressive. I tell you another great storyteller, if you can tolerate everything that he is Bill Burr, you know, another good storyteller. But those guys are. Mm-hmm. When I was in preaching class, I remember Jim Johnson and Mark Scott both referenced Garrison Keillor.
Oh yeah,
Prairie Home Companion.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you what, I listen, and this is the weird part. As a kid, like I would listen to that. Like I would when that would come on, I would listen. I'm probably the only 15, 16 year old kid that's listening to Garrison Keillor, because you just got so captivated by the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong and all the men are strong, the women are good looking, and all the kids are about average. And he just goes down this winding trail. And I remember when I took homiletics, I think it must have been just a homiletics class, and they mentioned Garrison Keillor, and I was like, what does Garrison Keillor have to do with preaching?
Yeah.
And then when they started tying those things together, that's when I started picking up on storytelling. Like that's what I care about. Like I like the storytelling aspect. Yeah. I want to take you someplace, you know.
Yeah.
That was so good. How do you define your preaching style?
Well, it certainly is a lot more conversational. When somebody says to me, I felt like you were just talking to me and we were having a cup of coffee, that's the best compliment I can get. I think in my early days, I really went after the Craddock style of kind of the, you know, the shock and awe kind of thing, and look at my right hand and then I'll hit you with my left kind of a feel. But I found that, you know, as I've gotten older, and my audience, they're so in need of help. Yeah. I think it's Jed Wilhite that says people aren't on a truth quest, they're on a hope quest. Huh. And we keep giving them truth, which is good, but what they need to know is that there's hope. Then they'll learn the truth. And so I think I tell a lot of stories. Bob Russell taught me years ago, never be the hero of your own story. You know, be the resident idiot, be the guy that, you know, says something stupid to his wife and she calls him on it. You know, be the guy that didn't read the instructions. Be the guy that cut somebody off in traffic and then felt bad later. And if you share those kind of things, it really endears you to your audience, and they realize, oh, if this guy can do it, I can do it. So I think from my perspective, I do love telling stories, but I definitely want to, you know, lead with the humor, get to the point, not be the hero, and really at the end of it, that's what's portable. When you think about all the sermons you and I have heard, what do we remember? First and foremost, we remember the stories, you know, and then maybe some great one-liners or some great key insights, but it's really the story. So if the story can really attach to your point, then that's gold.
Yeah. I went over to Ozark, would have been this last year. Yeah. Preaching and teaching. And I did a session on storytelling. And one of the things that I'd studied leading up to that, because I'm a terrible, terrible workshop guy. Like, hey, tell me how you do that. And it's like, okay, can I just do it? It'd be better if I don't know how to tell you how to do it and do it, you know, but I don't. And so what I had to start doing is breaking down, like, so why does this story, you know, one of the things that I jumped into is I started looking at the science behind storytelling and brain chemistry and the different things that happen and how you can hold attention longer by creating suspense, by triggering dopamine, by triggering cortisol, by hanging something out on a ledge and leaving it there, by bringing forward just a single question that causes a little bit of panic. And I started going through that. I think the lecture was probably terrible, but the study leading up to it, absolutely incredible. Just how cool it was to like learn this, like, oh, this is what you, like, what do you want to do? Like, where's everybody at? Like, everybody is experiencing cortisol overload right now. Everybody has it. Okay. So then here's what we should do. I should tell a story. And so I'm going to begin by telling the story about the time I shot this coyote out the window of my living room through the screen from my dining room. And then I had to explain it to my wife, because here's what you need. You need to be able to block everything off for just a minute. Put yourself in that story. And now all these questions are starting to trigger. It's like, so why were you shooting at coyotes out the window? Do you have neighbors? Was your wife pissed when she came home and she saw the hole in the screen? You know, how did you explain it? You know, like, there's what we need is we just need to be blocked off and put into isolation, you know, for just a moment. Right. But the connection between storytelling and brain chemistry and the body chemistry, it was so cool to me just how all these things work together, you know,
which is why we like movies, right?
Absolutely.
Which is why we like television shows or any kind of show, because it takes us away from our normal world, puts us in a different situation, and we feel something different. And then we come out of there and go back to life.
Yeah. I really like what you said about hope. That's good. You know, I was watching through the election and all the stuff that was going on. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, not to dive into politics at all, but just kind of where I was and where I kind of existed in this space of, man, there's some things I really want to see happen and some things I don't want to see happen. And I really want to, there's things I love and things I don't love. And there's weirdness on every side, but I know this, if I watch pixels on a screen of one man leaving his address for the last 4 years and somebody else moving into that address for the next 4 years, if I watch the pixels on the screen and something inside of me emotionally gets jostled, I'm a little too invested, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I'm a little too invested. Mm-hmm. And if I start to feel any sort of hopelessness, mm-hmm. like that, you might not be nearly as stable as you think you are, Jared. You know, mm-hmm. if you can find yourself in a place of, oh, this is all going downhill. It's like, hold on a second. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sitting there and I was praying about it. I was thinking about it. And, you know, one of the things that just kind of erupted from that moment of just real honesty of like, you're too in on this, you know, mm-hmm. one of the things that came through was, Jared, why would you feel hopeless? You know? And it's kind of like, you know, hope sleeps in the hull of the boat. That's where hope is. Hope sleeps in the hull. Mm-hmm. And you don't wake hope up until you've done everything you can possibly do to mm-hmm. keep your head above water. Mm-hmm. You don't go wake up hope until then. I mean, what Romans talks about, like, hope is, you don't hope for things you have, you know, hope is something that you only hope when you have no other option. Think about when you were little and Christmas rolls around and the great big huge catalog comes out and you start going through and you're looking at skateboards and you're looking at a pogo stick or a pogo ball, or you're looking at, you know, toy guns or whatever it might be, and you're circling these things. And why do we take those things and circle them in this big catalog and then hand them to our mom and dad? Because at the end of the day, you don't stand a chance of getting any of those things if not for them. Mm-hmm. That's hope, you know, mm-hmm. like you can't do this on your own. And how many times do I find myself going, I'm hopeless. And it's like, well, are you doing anything? Well, I mean, there's things I can do. I'm not doing it. It's like, mm-hmm. that's not, you wake hope up when you've tried, when you've battened the freaking sails down, when you've been paddling all night, when you've been praying and screaming and crying. Now go down below and wake up hope. And I promise you, when he comes up out of there, he is going to line somebody out, and then you're going to be in good shape, you know? And that was the thing that really kind of erupted for me. Like hope is built off of, I've done everything I can, and now I don't have an option. Except.
Yeah. And it's interesting how those disciples, when they do go wake Jesus up, they don't say, would you come up and fix this? They say, don't you care if we drown? Isn't that great? I don't even believe he can do anything about it.
That's one of my favorite.
No one's up there bailing water going, hey, maybe we ask Jesus to do this. He seems to be powerful. No, they're going, hey, how come Jesus isn't bailing water with us?
What's beautiful is like the next line. Like they come down with the really heavy handed, like, do you not care? Yeah. Lord, do you not care? It's kind of like, what kind of guy are you running around with? If this guy's napping in the middle and you assume he doesn't, like, what kind of person are you to begin with? Like you, like he picked you and like you're hanging with, and you're like, don't you care? You know, yeah. This guy's not helping. He's not rowing. He's not even standing up here being scared with us. You know, he's doing nothing. Like, this just sucks, you know? And then he steps out. He scolds the wind and the waves. And then he turns and he scolds them. And then they sit and they look at each other and go, what kind of guy is this?
Who is he?
What manner of man is this? It's kind of like, that's hope. For me, I appreciate that line so much. I appreciate that you sharing that from Judd Wilhite. That's really good. But for me, that's one of the things the last couple of weeks has been, look, hope is in the hull. Hope is down in the stern. You know, it doesn't just show up for no reason. It's waiting on you to do everything you could do. And then when you can't, you go below and you shake him. Because when he comes out, oh, he's going to handle it. And you're going to get scolded too, but he's going to handle it. You know,
that's really good.
Oh man, that was just really a powerful thing for me. When it comes to preaching, like preaching pitfalls, and you see guys come through, young guys, even older guys, they get in these grooves, or they have a catch in their preaching or something that's there. What do you see preaching pitfalls for guys?
You know, I think the biggest one really is assuming the audience is going to stay with you for the entire time. And so, you know, we've already talked about, you got to hook them early with, here's why this matters to you. Because if it doesn't, they're going to start making their grocery list, or now they can just change a channel, you know, or just turn off the feed. Used to be that they were going to sit there out of just pure courtesy.
Right.
But I think that you have to look at it kind of like a hammock. Okay. And so people are very dialed in at the beginning. Is this worth my time? And they're very dialed in at the end because they know it's almost over. You know, they're thinking, okay, he's landing the plane here. Let's get your stuff together. But in the middle, you've got to kind of prop it up a few times. And that's a great way to use stories and props, or even a video, something funny. For me, by the time I get into the text, I'm probably 10 minutes in. And now I know I need some, what I like to call, commercial breaks for people to kind of, you know, catch up with you. Because I always tell communicators, your thought process is here, you know, let's say the engine, and then three cars back are your words, and three cars back are your audience. And you got to slow down every now and then so everybody kind of catches up to where you just were. So having that commercial break to tell a story, or when I read a text, I just try to find things in there I find are amusing.
Yep.
You know, it could be something as silly as, you know, you read a passage and it says, but, and I'll stop and I'll go, hey, this is a big but.
Yeah, right.
And I cannot lie.
Right.
You know, and everybody who's heard that song starts laughing,
right,
you know,
right.
Or I'll reference, what did I do this past weekend? I talked about Simon the sorcerer. The Simon the Tanner that was on the seashore. And I said, and we don't really know if he was selling seashells or not. You know, it's just that typical little dad humor.
Right.
But what it does is it wakes the audience up. Oh, somebody laughed. What was funny? You know, that kind of thing. I just see guys, they get into the text and they just assume everybody cares about it as much as they do. And they don't, unless they know it's going to fix something in their life.
Right.
So lead with that and find those little moments along the way. I also see guys try to be funny and they're not. And so they don't know what to do after they told that joke and they end
they
up
bomb.
Hopping around, you know, I the best advice I ever got on humor was don't expect anything to be funny and you'll be pleasantly surprised.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, you just keep going. Right. That way if it bombs, oh well. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's my big thing.
Oh, when I talked to Bob Russell, one of the things he talked about was, we talked a little bit about the humor part. We talked about, you know, just the preaching course. He's a genius, just an absolute genius, you know, mm-hmm. at home in it, you know, just
yeah.
knows all the working parts. He's the guy that's just knows all the working parts of the machine, you know. I remember in one of his sermons, he made the comment, he was reading through Ecclesiastes and he got to the verse that said something about, I'll misquote it, but it was the idea of, and the grasshopper is dragging itself along, you know, and he stops and he just goes, anybody know what that means? Of course you do, you know, and then he said something like, yeah, this is about old men. And he just goes on into the next line. And it was just cute enough and enough of a window. You could be like, he's a guy, he's a human, you know, he's an aging guy. Like that was a good little whimsical spot. And he just, you know, appropriately just moved right on to the next thing. So yeah, that was excellent. What do you notice in preaching? What do you notice with guys? You know, their storytelling.
You know, when I listen to guys, I pick up on those really clear, I like to call them hashtag statements, mm-hmm. that they've worked on that statement so well. Like Mark Batterson, he's a guy that he just, when he drops statements, it's like, write it down. Mm-hmm. Here's another one, because they're good, they're memorable, they're portable, and they make you think a different way. I love those kind of things. I do love great stories that land on a great point. You don't want to get to the end of it and think that was funny, but it didn't take me anywhere.
Right.
So guys that can do that. The other thing that I look for, and this is very, very subtle, but it's the guys that use just things that happen in life as examples. And here's what I mean by that. We reach those moments in the message where we say, you know, here's what this may intersect with you. You may be at home and your wife says, could you empty the dishwasher? And you say, not yet, you know, or you're at work and somebody says to you, this, you know, we all find ourselves having to come up with those real life scenarios and we default to home, work, and being alone, those three things. But there's so many other life experiences out there. So when I listen to guys, I look for what's the little audience they're talking to and what's the little example. I heard Brian Tome say one time, and this was years ago, he preached a message and he was talking about just lust and those kind of things and kind of veering off the road in your marriage. And he said this, is there somebody at work that when you kind of brush up against them, you like it?
Wow.
I thought, wow, that's specific.
Yeah, that's good.
But that's a whole lot better than, you know, is there somebody at work you think is kind of cute? Well, whatever. But when he got that personal or that specific, yeah. I thought, oh, that's good. I'm going to write that down. Yeah. So I look for those little sayings like that can help me, you know, apply the text rather than just illustrate it.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder why that is. I wonder why that connects with you so well. That's such a good observation. I never thought about that, but there is. And it's also a window too, isn't it? I mean, you kind of can get a picture on like, where's this guy been? Like, what's gone on in his head? Who has he had conversations with? Yeah, that's really good, Rusty. I appreciate that. Tell me this. There's a load of fellas out there and, you know, you've experienced some pretty heavy stuff at Real Life through the last, you know, was that 2019? Had some really heavy stuff out there, you know?
Yeah.
There's a lot of guys that get in ministry and we really do think that like it's like we can't even be prepared, like we can't even get prepared for some of the things that we run into, that life throws us, that our marriages will throw us, that our kids will throw us, that the church, our eldership, our board, our own health, those things come crashing in on us. And like, we didn't take a class on any of that stuff, you know? There was nobody, like we're talking about with the pandemic, no one took a class called How to Navigate a Pandemic, you know? And so we get these young guys who, you know, I keep a picture on my desktop of Jared Wilson. And it's been up there for, I don't even know how long. But I keep it on so that it's always there. It's just always on my desktop. And my reason why is because I understand how the anxiety and the depression can take somebody and beat them down to that place to where there's some logic somehow in just trying to just evacuate and get completely away from it and just completely check out. There's so many guys out there who are trying to do ministry, and some of them are just knocking it out of the park, and some of them are secretly just buried underneath their own, you know, their own weight of addiction, their own weight of tired of the cycle. I think for so many guys, it's just tired of the cycle of, I don't want to have to confess this again. I don't want to have to try to rebuild my marriage again. I don't want to lose this job. I don't want to be this person anymore, that they begin to bail out and they just have these things hanging on them all the time. What kind of encouragement do you offer to some guys who you find in that place?
Yeah, I appreciate you asking that. I think that's so helpful for people to hear that. And just to give a little bit of, you know, flesh to the bones of that story. In 2019, January, we just are hitting the 2-year date this week, I believe. We had a pastor on staff who committed suicide. And as we began to unpeel the layers of what was going on, there was, this was a guy that had had a failed marriage and had lost his job because of an affair years and years ago, and then rebuilt his life and went through tons of counseling and got, you know, married to somebody else, and they were thriving in another church. And then they came our way, and he had probably a couple of years of really, really great ministry. And then he began to kind of take away some of those guardrails and get too close to some female staff, and to really cross some boundaries. And an affair had happened that we had called him on. He had never admitted it, which limited our ability to share that. But then 3 days later, ended up taking his life. What we discovered was he was on antidepressants and would often just go off of them, which is a horrible thing to do. You cannot just quit those cold turkey. Right. He was talking about suicide to his family weeks before this. There were a lot of indicators that we just did not know. Hindsight, obviously, is 2020. But what I would say to people that are out there that are struggling is, first of all, if you have some kind of mental illness, which many of us have, some of us just have basic general anxiety disorder. That's a basic thing. General anxiety disorder, it's often called GAD. It's very normal. A lot of people have that. Some people, it spirals into more of OCD, or it might, you know, be go into full-blown depression. It's very, very common. And I think the stats are off the chart right now coming out of COVID. Then you add an accelerant to that, like debt or a bankruptcy or a failed marriage or a bout with pornography you can't seem to quit, or another addiction. Well, or you get fired or whatever it is. Now that's just an accelerant to the mental issues you already had there. I would say, first of all, you are not alone, and you need to talk to somebody about it. Our secrets are what make us sick, and you have got to get out in front of this and just admit, here's where I am, here's how I'm feeling. And I'd also tell you, the world is not better off without you. Because when you're in that dark hole, you just tend to think everybody would be a lot happier if I were gone. Can I just tell you, the personal hell that I went through, our church went through, our staff went through, and his widow went through, it was not better that he's gone. Yeah, it would have been really rough if he were to confess the affair. And then, you know, obviously not have a job in ministry for a while and have to put his life back together again and all those things. It'd be difficult, but we'd be so glad he's here. Mm. There's still times I think I'm going to text him because we had so many shared interests and he's just not there. And there's a pain. And to top it all off, this was a guy that had mentored a lot of kids. And they find themselves thinking, if he can't make it, how can I make it? And then to top it all off, and in his case, he didn't have kids, but the stats of people that commit suicide, it's very high that they had a parent that committed suicide. And so when you think about that, remember, you're not just hurting your kids. You could be helping them take their life one day. And so you compile all that. Don't let that guilt you out. Talk to somebody, go get help, get some medication. And then for those of you who are dealing with the loss of somebody or trying to lead your church through a difficult crisis that you're going through right now, you got to take care of you. Because if you're not healthy, it's the whole, you got to put your mask on first in the plane before you take care of the person next to you. And for me, I here's an old David Crowder song that there's a refrain in the bridge of it where he just says over and over again, well, it's just you and me here now. Only you and me here now. And just goes on and on and on. And I think about that so often because there are those moments you think, God, it's just you and me. And I remember saying to a mentor of mine, a guy named Mike Bro, who's out here with us and he's a teaching pastor for us. He's just a sage. I looked at him the day after the suicide and I said, man, I sure wish I had a job mowing grass. And he looked at me and he goes, but then who would do this?
Wow.
I said, don't you put that on me, Mike, bro. You can't do that to me. Yeah. And he said, you're equipped to do this. All your years of getting close to God, of understanding his love for you, of it's just you and me here now, yeah, of the team that he's put around you, the wife that he's put by your side, the people that are going to stand by you. Yeah, there'll be people that don't understand and they'll leave or they'll accuse you or they'll blame you. But you can do this and we're going to walk through it together. And he was right. And we're different people because of it, but it's made us have a tremendous outreach in our community for people that struggle with that, yeah, because we continue to be the church that deals with real issues.
Yeah. Oftentimes somebody will come in the office and want to talk about something, some tragedy that's kind of befallen them. And partly due to, I think, you know, my own Enneagram number and just personality. I always get really excited when somebody is taking their jacked up issue and trying their best to pull it out of that dark place and try to air it out for the first time. Mm. And you know, one of the things I always say is like, here's the deal. Like, every bad thing that happens to us, everything that we go through, that we experience that's tragic and we don't have great answers for it, it's a key around your neck and you just wear these things. And some of us have a lot of them. But here's the deal. If we continue to wear it and we keep it in front of us and we keep it out there in the open and we're able to just not wrestle with it alone, but hold on to it, inevitably what God ends up doing is he brings somebody along in our path who has a lock that they can't get undone. And then you and them get to experience God's love and his healing simultaneously, which is one of the most incredible things in the world. Mm-hmm. So the thing you have to do is hold that. Like, you got to keep that on there. You don't want to put it in your pocket. You don't want to throw it in the junk drawer. You don't want to try to get rid of it. Like, that's a thing you have to wear. And then watch how many times you'll hear a story and then all of a sudden it'll just click. It's like, why do I have the answer to this? Like, this is...
Yeah.
Here it is. And you unlock and you experience this healing at the same time. And it sounds like to me that experience for you guys has done that in many ways that I'm sure you and your staff have probably had these really wonderful moments after that of, as bad as this is, look what's opened up because of it. And look what we've been able to unlock for so many people. You know, I appreciate you sharing that. Thank you for sharing that. I know I didn't toss that on my list that I sent over to you, but I appreciate you being willing to talk through that.
Well, I love your metaphor of the key and the lock. That is so good. And what was really interesting was while we were going through that, we started having other churches reach out to us that had been through it. And they were like, here's our key. And so it was good. So helpful. Like the a pastor from a church at the place up in Connecticut that had the school shooting, Sandy Hook. He called and he said, let me just tell you, you know, here's a few things. And we had a school shooting as well that happened a few months after the suicide. And so, and one of our kids from our church was killed. And this guy called up and he walked us through it. We had a church just south of us who had a pastor commit suicide. They came down, they bought us lunch. Wow. They bought our entire staff lunch and just sat at round tables and just listened and told stories. And we just talked. Mm. And oh, it was so healing. And then since then, we've heard of some other churches that have gone through this and we've been able to reach out to them. So you're right. God never wastes a hurt. As our friend Michael DeFazio says, it's not everything happens for a reason, but everything can be redeemed. Mm. And that's what God is doing.
Yeah, that's so good. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that so much. Rusty, I'm crazy about this. Let me ask you one final thing. You'll be the first one to engage in this question. I haven't asked anybody else. So you're first. This is on my new list. This is on my new list. And so you're setting the standard. You're setting the standard right here.
Looking forward to it.
I want to hear you share the gospel with me.
That is a great, great question. I guess I could sum it up in John 3:16, but I'll sum it up a little bit more than that. And that is, God showed up and removed all the obstacles for us to find life and hope with him. And the way I would detail that is Jesus said, I've come that you may have life and have it abundantly. There's physical distance. He says, he's here. There's sin distance. Jesus paid the debt. There's emotional distance. You are loved. There's our ability distance. We're given the Holy Spirit. He removed everything so we can be with him.
Thank you for doing that. Appreciate that. That's really good. You set the bar high. I feel bad for the next guy.
Thank you, my friend.
I feel bad for Caleb Kaltenbach when he shows up.
Oh, we all do. I love Caleb.
Oh, yeah. That's good. Rusty, thank you so much for joining me on this. Appreciate the conversation, the dialogue, the insights. This was really good for me. Appreciate all the stuff that you've talked about. Any encouragement you've given other churches and other guys that are out there fighting through it. Appreciate what you're doing. Typically what I do is I share something about the preaching. Like when I listen to you preach, here's some things that I pick up on is that you really are, you come in with such an approachable ease. And that's something that I really admire and I'm even jealous of on some level, because I don't have a whole lot of that, but you really do just come in real light with people and then just take them to the deep end. And man, that's just such a good characteristic.
Thank you.
So I appreciate the way you do the things that you do. And thank you for being on this podcast.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor to be here.
Yeah. Well, hey, I'll let you get back to it. And hopefully we can connect another time.
Thank you.
All right. I'll talk to you later.